Hello and welcome to this Endo Life. I'm Jessica Duffin. I'm an endo warrior and endo health coach, and this podcast is all about living and thriving with endometriosis. As always, this podcast is here for educational purposes only. Please consult your medical practitioner before making any nutritional changes or bringing in any supplements. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to give a shout out to my lovely sponsors at BU, and I wanted to tell you about their new bath bombs, which are naturally made and contain beautiful essential oils, and their peppermint and eucalyptus essential oils bath bomb is doing so well right now with the endometriosis community. They're getting loads of feedback about it, and you know, if you love the patches themselves, you're going to love the bath bombs, because essentially it's the patch in a bath bomb. So, you know, if you're on your period or if you're in pain, you could have a bath with some of the bath bombs or one of them. I don't know, you could have multiple if you want. And then get out the bath, maybe rub in some CBD balm and put your patch on top, which is what a lot of people are feeding back that they're doing. So I would love to do that, but I don't have a bath, so I can't. But if you have a bath, then, you know, I think these new bath bombs could be a lovely way to help alleviate some of your pain. So if you'd like to check them out, you can go to BU, which is buonline.co.uk, and you can also order them from anywhere in the world on cultbeauty.co.uk, and they deliver worldwide. So before we dive into today's episode, I wanted to give a shout out to the lovely girls at Semaine. They are two sisters with endometriosis. They've been on the show before, and they founded Semaine, which is a supplement company for people with periods. To originally, their first supplement was to aid with PMS and period pain. And I know that it is a lifesaver for so many people with endometriosis and painful periods. I absolutely love that supplement. It's really helped me when I've had to kind of follow protocols for SIBO, or, you know, I've had a stressful time and I've been worried about my period. I've been able to avoid a flare with that supplement. And they've always been so kind and kindly sent me them when I've needed them. And now they've come out with a new supplement called The Daily. And it is a hormone balancing supplement, which is designed to help with healthy skin, stable mood, fewer cravings in your luteal phase, blood sugar balance. And they recently gifted it to me. Honestly, I said this to my client the other day. My blood sugar levels have never felt so stable as they did when I was taking that daily supplement. As you guys know, I work very hard to stabilize my blood sugar levels, because that will keep inflammation down. And it also ensures that you have healthy, balanced hormones. It's really, really key. And I have a history of having really unstable blood sugar. Originally growing up, it was because of my eating disorder. But then in later years, it was much more down to, firstly, following a vegan diet when I didn't understand how to build my plate, a healthy blood sugar balancing plate. And secondly, because of my microbiome. And my microbiome, because of SIBO, is built to actually extract more glucose from my food and cause blood sugar instability. This is actually a really key piece of blood sugar. If your blood sugar is resisting all of the strategies you're trying, that is a massive clue that your microbiome is affecting the way that your blood sugar is being controlled in your body. So we need to work on that, work on your gut. And mine has improved massively, but I still react much more erratically than someone else would to blood sugar fluctuations. And I couldn't believe the difference. It was like I had a whole month of like stable blood sugar. It was incredible. And as a result, I had much more of a healthier cycle. I felt a lot more satisfied. I had less food cravings. I just felt a lot more stable in energy. So I'm a really big fan of this. And as I said, blood sugar is a huge piece to managing your hormones, hence why blood sugar is such a big part of their supplement. So the girls have kindly given me a discount code for you guys. It will get you 20% off your first order, whether that's the daily or the PMS and period support capsules. And the code is ENDOLIFE, one word, all caps. So ENDOLIFE. And that code is valid for the next 6 months, I believe. So you can use it at any time. So let me know how you get on with them. I'd love to hear if you find them as amazing as I did. And I hope that they bring you a happier and healthier cycle and period.
Hi, everyone. Okay, so I cannot find a single quiet room in this house. We are surrounded by traffic on every corner. And yeah, it's just very difficult. So I'm sorry if you can hear traffic in the background. Hopefully you can't. And we have edited it out, but we'll see. So this is the third in my IG live series for Endometriosis Awareness Month. And as I've mentioned before, I get a lot of feedback from listeners who enjoy it when I share the IG live. So that's why I'm doing it on the podcast. And each week of this IG live series is themed on a healing area of endo. And this week we're talking about structural problems and pain signals. Now, structural issues like adhesions can affect not just pain, but symptoms such as endo belly, urinary frequency, or even difficulty emptying the bladder, urgency with the bowel, so many different things. So addressing this is a really crucial part of healing that shouldn't be skipped. Now, before we dive into today's topic, I just wanted to say that these IG lives revolve around your questions. So if you want to submit one, follow me on Instagram at the Endobelly Coach and send me a question when you see my stories calling for submissions. So this week I'm answering, what's causing painful sex after excision surgery? If it's adhesions, what can we do? How do endo-related adhesions cause SIBO? What range of symptoms can adhesions on the bowel cause? And is there a way to assess your own pelvic floor? If you want to learn more about how structural support fits into a healing plan for endo, join my free Endo Awareness Month Masterclass, The 5 Key Pillars of Healing, How to Lower Endo Symptoms and Take Back Control Without the Overwhelm. This 2-hour masterclass will take you through the pivotal first sessions that I have with every client to help them determine their own personal roadmap. We're then going to move through the key pillars of healing that I use in my protocol and that I've seen help clients get symptom relief like time and time again. Best bit is that I've removed the fluff, the excess, and the confusion to deliver you the clearest, most effective strategies that will get you results quicker and without the overwhelm. In this workshop, you will define your why to motivate you and anchor you if things get tough and give you the momentum to keep going. You'll identify your core endo challenges so that you can prioritize focusing on the symptoms that are affecting you the most, rather than having to tackle everything all at once. You'll get clear on your desired symptom outcomes so that you can see where your roadmap is going and put the right healing strategies in place to get there. You will learn the key pillars of healing so that you can establish which strategies to start first and which to begin later in your journey. And you'll set goals and baby steps so that you can map out your journey and actually get started as soon as the masterclass is over, if you want to start that quickly. I'm holding the masterclass on 3 different dates throughout March. One has already gone, but we still have Wednesday, 22nd of March, 6:30 p.m. GMT coming up, and Thursday, the 30th of March, 7 p.m. BST. Places are limited because I always get a lot of questions in these masterclasses. I do a Q&A at the end, and so I am limited in the spaces so that I can answer everyone's questions. So to book your spot, just go to the show notes in the podcast and follow the link to sign up.
All right, so I'm going to start with, had a lot of questions in, had about, 10, 12. I've picked 4 of the kind of
ones that I think are going to be the most useful and can't think of the right word, but generic, is going to like be relatable to most people. So first question is, what's causing painful sex after excision and rectal shaving? If it's adhesions, what do I do? So adhesions, just kind of, let's do a bit of an adhesions 101. Adhesions develop as a result of a wound, injury, inflammation, or infection. And they are like band-like and web-like structures made of collagen. They're scar tissue that spread over the infected, wounded area. Essentially, if it's wounded, it's kind of like to knit back the area and to protect it, to like knit it together and to protect it. And if it's an infection, they wrap around the infected like organ or site to kind of prevent the infection from spreading. Because they're made up of collagen, they don't show up on scans. So you could be having all of this pain, they do a scan and they're like, oh, there's nothing going on. Obviously, not all endometriosis will show up on a scan anyway. It's only like endometriomas or some cases deep infiltrating, but also adhesions don't show up too. So adhesions will form after surgery. And the idea is that they're helpful, but it can come to a point where they're like unhelpful because they tend to get a little bit excessive and go too far. So instead of kind of just knitting back the area together and kind of keeping their work to an isolated area, they can spread further and start attaching organs to each other, start attaching like the bladder to the pelvic wall and the ovary to this, and like attaching from a scar from an excision site to the intestines and things like that. So for example, I have an adhesion from surgery. The incision site is right in front of my bladder, and my bladder is now attached to that kind of scar tissue through an adhesion, just an example. So adhesions are very, very, very strong. The pressure that they put on organs is really, really profound, and that's going to create a lot of pain. Not just pain, but dysfunction of organs and natural like muscle movement and motility if they're putting a lot of, you know, pressure or pulling or distorting. So often people come out of surgery and still have pain and think that the surgery hasn't worked, or the endo wasn't all excised, but actually the problem could be the adhesions that develop after surgery. So in 50 to 100% of abdominal surgery cases, adhesions develop. Now, the reason why that is such a wide range, sorry, this cat is running around like crazy, is that it depends on the type of surgery, it depends on how extensive it is. The various studies, I think like the average would probably work out at around like 60 to 70% of people, but the varying studies, it starts at like 50% to 100%. Very, very, very strong chance that you're going to get adhesions, especially if you've had more extensive surgery. Like if you've had to have like deeper, you know, like a, I don't know what you would call it, I can't think, but they've had to do more extensive incision sites or repeated incisions. So it sounds like from your describing that, yes, there might be adhesions that have formed from the surgery, and maybe pelvic floor dysfunction. People with endo tend to have something called a hypertonic pelvic floor, a tight pelvic floor. Now, that doesn't mean you have a strong pelvic floor. You can have a weak pelvic floor, but it's tight. And actually, if you have a tight pelvic floor, it's more likely it's going to be weak because the muscles aren't able to work properly when they're tight. And many people with endometriosis have a hypertonic pelvic floor from years of being in pain and like tensing up and making everything tight. And then surgery can actually make that. Yeah, you can definitely watch it again, Amanda. I'm going to post this onto my Instagram feed after this, after I get off. I'll post it straight away and it will go up as a podcast episode next week. So if you want to listen to it, you can there. So where was I? The, yeah, So after the surgery can make that worse. The surgery can, the trauma of surgery, like I don't mean the emotional trauma, although that's definitely an issue as well, but the physical trauma on the body can kind of worsen the pelvic floor issues that are there. So it might be one or the other, it might be both. There might also be some nerve sensitivity going on, which you would probably need a specialist to talk about if the nerves were affected during surgery. But calming down the nervous system, doing a lot of like work, calming the system down, retraining the brain to feel safer in your body, feel safer in the pelvis, feel safer around sex, is going to really help to calm down those pain signals and how sensitive the nerves are. Because if the brain feels unsafe, it's basically going to tell the body, I need to know everything that's going on and I need to be getting all of the messages. So the nerves are going to be going kind of hyper on hyper alert. You can also, there are things like alpha lipoic acid and lion's mane that actually help to repair nerves. I don't know how effective they would be if nerves were impacted during surgery or from endometriosis. I'm not sure we have the research, but you could certainly try them. And there are, I can't think of the word right now, but there are specific types of nerve doctors who could help with that. But nerves are also impacted by adhesions and the pelvic floor anyway. So working on the pelvic floor and adhesion should also calm down any nerve sensitivity. Also working on inflammation should calm down nerve sensitivity too, because an inflamed nerve is not a happy nerve. So I would, what to do about adhesions? I would get your pelvic floor assessed by a pelvic floor physiotherapist who is versed in endometriosis and who hopefully is able to identify and work on adhesions. If you can get that together, it's going to be, you're going to be able to get two done at once. They may only be able to go so far with the adhesions. You might need to get extra work done, but you could certainly start there. So get an assess, get your pelvic floor assessed. They might do a vaginal and rectal examination, but if you're in a lot of pain, they won't start there. They'll start working externally until you're ready to do internal work, you feel more comfortable with them, or you're in less pain. And they should also be able to assess for adhesions and do some work on that. If they feel like they can't support you with the adhesions, or you feel like you'd like more work, then there are people who specialize in breaking down adhesions and also just supporting with things like painful sex, endometriosis, heavy bleeding, Mercier therapy. So a Mercier therapist would be able to help there. Visceral manipulation therapist, but try to find one who is familiar with endometriosis and the impact of surgery. And Clear Passage, if you can afford it, Clear Passage is the gold standard of breaking down adhesions. I recommend actually looking at the Clear Passage website, because they've got some great research on there about endometriosis and adhesions and surgery and adhesions and painful sex and adhesions. So it's just good to look at and read anyway. So that's where I would start from an adhesion perspective. Course, like I said in previous lives, that like working on inflammation, working on your nervous system can all help to calm down pain. But if you're having pain specifically during sex, then I would look first at the adhesions and the pelvic floor. So I hope that was helpful. Take a quick sip of water. Okay. How do endo adhesions cause SIBO? So you probably all know this by now because I talk about it all the time, but SIBO stands for small intestine bacterial overgrowth. It is a condition where bacteria that should be living in your large intestine are living in your small intestine, and that causes lots of problems like IBS and bloating, which we may mistake as the endo belly. So one of the key reasons why SIBO is caused, really the key reason, there's normally a couple of factors, but like the straw that breaks the camel's back is when the migrating motor complex is impaired. And so I'm going to call it the MMC for short. That's what we tend to refer to it as. So the MMC is a wave-like motion that occurs in the small intestine, and it's like the washing up of the small intestine. So you've eaten, the food has left the small intestine, and so we've kind of cleared the plates, but now we're washing up the plates. We're washing up the small intestine. So the MMC clears the small intestine between meals and overnight, and it clears the small intestine of food debris, like leftover bits of food and bacteria, because bacteria, there's only a teeny tiny amount of bacteria that should be present in the small intestine. The rest should be in large amounts in the large intestine. So when the MMC goes, we get this buildup of bacteria that shouldn't be there. And there are kind of two overarching ways that the migrating motor complex is impaired. So structural and functional, and then underneath those two kind of umbrellas are different ways that can happen. So functional is literally the migrating motor complex itself is impaired, and that can occur through food poisoning that creates antibodies that actually damage the nerves and the muscles that control the migrating motor complex. Hypothyroidism, diabetes, there are many things that can actually damage the migrating motor complex. Structural is when the migrating motor complex works fine, but there is something structurally wrong that prevents it from doing its job properly and going all the way through the small intestine. So that can be kinks, loops, strictures. So it's like, it's kind of, let me use my sleeve, like, this is how big the small intestine is. And then it's, you know, it's for some reason it's smaller, it's narrowed because there is an adhesion wrapped around it, or there is some kind of growth, blockages. There are conditions that lead to pockets along the small intestine. So instead of a nice smooth tube, there are pockets coming out of the side. And so the migrating motor complex goes through, but it can't get into the pocket. So we've got these pockets of bacteria leading to SIBO. So with endometriosis, we know that adhesions aren't just isolated to the pelvic cavity itself. They can be further up in the abdomen, maybe from the endolesions themselves or from surgery. And so what can happen is the adhesions can attach themselves to the intestines, or even if they're not attached to the intestines directly, they may be distorting the abdomen in such a way that the migrating motor complex just can't get through the small intestine properly. It might be directly from adhesions constricting the small intestine itself. It might be that the adhesions are creating loops, are creating kinks. But it could also be that the small intestine is being distorted and squashed and kind of moved in such a way because adhesions are affecting the structure of the abdomen. And as a result, we get this buildup of bacteria in the small intestine leading to SIBO. So that's how endometriosis adhesions or adhesions from surgery can cause SIBO.
Just a reminder that this episode is sponsored by BU. These natural patches last for 12 hours, so they bring you prolonged relief and can begin working on relaxing your muscles before the pain kicks in, so you're prepared even if your period comes during the middle of the day. Some people even find that wearing them a night before their period can really help soothe the inflammation in the area. To shop, just head to the link in my show notes.
What range of symptoms can adhesions on the bowel cause? So it definitely varies from person to person, but typically, and it varies on where it is in the small bowel, how severe it is, what is it doing to the bowel? Is it constricting the bowel? Is it kinking the bowel? You know, all of these different things. But typically we might see constipation, pain with bowel movements. Of course, if it's actually adhesions from the fact that there are endometriosis lesions in the rectum, then you might get rectal bleeding when you're on your period. So there might be some blood. There may be pain, general pain in that area. You might find it difficult to have sex because if you think about, you know, having sex, you're thinking about your vagina and your bladder. They are, you know, right on top of each other. So you have your bladder, you have your vagina, and you have your bowels. So all of these can be affected. That entire area can be affected. There might be some inflammation. There might be some pelvic floor dysfunction. You might find that you struggle to do certain exercises. Maybe they're causing some rectal pain. So there could be numerous things going on, but I would look towards rectal pain, pain with bowel movements, difficulty with bowel movements, constipation. You might also have urgency or diarrhea. It might not cause constipation. It might be causing diarrhea or urgency because the bowel might not be sufficient to hold waste. It might be being affected in such a way, it might be constricted that you just can't hold waste, or the kind of pain and the positions that you've been adopting because of the adhesions have resulted in pelvic floor dysfunction that then has caused this urgency or this diarrhea. So those are some of the symptoms that may suggest adhesions on the bowel. Again, like I said, it might cause pain with sex, it might cause general pain in the pelvic area, but I would still lean towards like signs that something's up with the bowel. Is there a way for people to assess their pelvic floor themselves? No, not really. You couldn't like actually assess and diagnose yourself with like a hypertonic or a hypotonic floor unless you were a pelvic floor physiotherapist. And even then, I don't know how that would work because I'm not a pelvic floor physiotherapist. I don't know if like you trying to internally assess yourself, like you're going to be moving and like leaning in a way that might actually change how your muscles feel. So I don't know if someone could do that on themselves, but either way, you couldn't diagnose yourself and feel whether you had a hypertonic or a hypotonic pelvic floor. I think you could reasonably have an idea of whether you had a hypertonic pelvic floor. You could certainly go to a pelvic floor physiotherapist and say, look, I have these issues. I think something might be going on. And, you know, that might be pain during sex. It might be difficulty getting a tampon in. It could be chronic pelvic pain. It could be pain with bowel movements, pain with urination, frequency with urination, diarrhea, or constipation. All of those could suggest that there is pelvic floor issues. One thing you could do, which is not going to give you a definitive answer whether you have a tight pelvic floor or not, but it's just going to give you a little bit more information, is you could take a pelvic wand, yoni wand, whatever you want to call it, gently insert it if you're able to and it's not, you know, not painful, make sure it's clean, apply gentle pressure to the vaginal canal. And I can't remember if it's a clockwise or anti-clockwise motion, but I'm going to tell you where to get this information in a minute anyway, so you can double check. And you gently basically press around at the different points of the clock and notice where there is more pain. And that is basically indicating where there is a indicating where there's a trigger point. And that trigger point is where there's a lot of tension, there's like a knot. And it, you know, it could indicate that it's a hypertonic pelvic floor, but it's not enough to tell us that it's there. So you can actually then apply pressure and do some massage of the area of that trigger point if it's comfortable enough. Do very, very gently. You might have to build up over time, and that can help you ease some of the pain in that trigger point. I did an interview with the Yoni Empire 2 years ago, So if you go to my website or just type in like Jessica Duffin, Yoni Empire, the interview is going to come up and you can, and this is where I got this tutorial from. She takes us through how to do it. She gives us a blog post, how to do it with instructions. So have a listen to that episode, because I'm not the expert with this. I'm not a pelvic floor physiotherapist. She will tell you how to do it. But even with that, I mean, I am always hyper careful. But even with this tutorial, I would still just get the go-ahead from a pelvic floor physiotherapist first before you do it. Talk to them about doing it. Report your findings to them. And get an assessment. It's always best to get an assessment from a pelvic floor physiotherapist first. Okay, so those are the four main questions I wanted to answer. I did want to wrap up at 6, but I'm just going to have a very quick flick through the questions that came through to see if I can answer any, like, really quickly. Okay, I can answer this one pretty quickly. How common is it for ovaries to be adhered down to other organs in the pelvis? Do you know which is the most common organ for an ovary to be adhered to? Does this represent a greater severity of the disease? So I don't know if there are any stats about how common it is, or which organs would be the most common. In my practice, I see it, I don't know, maybe 50% of the time, but I don't have any stats on this. This is just me talking off the top of my head. I probably see it 50 to 60% of the time, maybe. I typically see ovaries stuck to the pelvic wall. That doesn't mean that that's what's most common. It doesn't mean that that's what you have. It's just what I see in my practice. It might be an indicator of the severity of disease, but I think we also have to take into account that surgery can create the presence of adhesions too. And my ovary is stuck to, I can't even remember where it's stuck to now, but it's not from the endo because I don't have severe endo. And, you know, I'm stage 1 or 2, I can't remember. But I'm one of those cases where I had all of the symptoms and they were very, very severe. We know that with endometriosis, you don't have to have loads of endometriosis or stage 4 endometriosis to have all of the symptoms. You can have all of the symptoms, but have stage 1, or you could have stage 4 endometriosis and have no symptoms. It doesn't, you know, that doesn't really indicate the severity of these symptoms, but, where was I going with this? I can't remember. Oh, my ovary being stuck to, I think it's my pelvis. Maybe it's gone back on itself and is attached to the vagina. I can't remember. But anyway, it's not from the endo. It's not from the endo lesions. It's actually from the surgery that mine is stuck there, why mine is stuck there. So I would, if you've, you know, I can't remember like all of the criteria of each stage, but certainly the presence of more adhesions does indicate more severity of disease. You know, like the more adhesions, the more lesions, and especially the presence of cysts indicates, you know, severity of the disease. But I think we also have to take into account that adhesions can be also caused from surgery too. So yeah, typically I see it pelvic wall, but that doesn't mean that's the only place. I'm not sure if there's any research on that. I don't think there is, but it's worth looking into. So I hope that was helpful, everyone. As I said, if you want to ask me more questions about this or more questions in general about endometriosis and endometriosis management, if you, want to like put together your own protocol using some of this information, or you want to learn more about like what are the key pillars of healing, then please come along to my free masterclass tomorrow to celebrate Endometriosis Awareness Month. I'm literally giving you a step-by-step protocol of the most core, like pivotal strategies to get your endometriosis symptoms down, get endometriosis under control, and basically get your life back. So you have to sign up via the link in my bio, or you can go directly to my website. It's not going to be on Instagram. It is a private group because I'm doing a presentation. So obviously I can't show you slides here. And then there's a Q&A at the end. Don't worry if you can't come live, because I will be recording it and then I'll be sending it via email to anyone who signed up. So if you want to join but you can't come live, you can still sign up and then get the email. So I hope this is helpful, everyone. I hope that you have learned something in the process, and that even if you haven't asked a question, that these answers have helped you. I will see you guys next week for our second to last hello. Cat's finally made his appearance. This is the first day we've been with these cats, and they're identical twins. And I don't know which one this is. I'm hoping that after 6 weeks, I'm going to know. I will see you guys next week for another IG Live. I just can't remember which day it is. I'll be sharing it. I hope you all have a lovely evening or a lovely day wherever you are in the world. Thank you.
So that's it. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to find out more about what I do or read more on endometriosis and living well with it, you can head to my Instagram page, which is this_endolife. You can head to my website, which is www.thisendolife.com. And you can also get a free guide to managing endometriosis naturally on my website. I've put the link in my show notes. It's a beginner's guide to getting started and all of the areas that I have worked on to help reduce my endometriosis symptoms and pain and live well with endometriosis. As always, if you like this show, please rate, review and or subscribe. It really, truly does help others to hear the podcast, and hopefully will help them to live better with endometriosis. This episode was produced by The Pod Farm. Whether you're an established podcaster or just getting started, visit thepodfarm.com to see how they can help you go from an idea to a finished show that's ready to be heard by the world.